Get Sleepy is a production of Slumber Studios and is made possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors and premium members. If you'd like to listen ad-free and access weekly bonus episodes, extra-long stories, and our entire back catalogue, you can try out Premium free for 7 days by following the link in the episode notes. Now, a quick word from our sponsors. Welcome to Get Sleepy, where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. My name's Thomas, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for listening. In tonight's story, written by Alexandra, we'll join Hercules for the fourth time as he works his way through the 12 labors. Last time, he found the golden deer that belonged to the goddess Artemis. And this time round, he has a similar task. He has to find and capture the Erymanthian boar, a legendary creature that lives on the slopes of a mountain. Once again, you can rest assured, no harm will come to this mystical animal, and our hero will treat it with respect and care. Tomorrow night, we have our weekly Thursday bonus episode on Get Sleepy Premium, where Vanessa will tell the story of a lady who spends a relaxing day planting flowers around her house before settling down for a cozy afternoon nap. In addition to our weekly premium exclusives, our supporters receive full access to the entire Get Sleepy catalogue, which stands at over 700 episodes and counting. And better still, everything is completely ad-free, giving you an ultra-relaxing, undisrupted listening experience. You can sign up to a monthly or yearly payment plan with the first 7 days coming completely free of charge, so you can make sure you're happy. Learn more about Get Sleepy Premium and support the ongoing production of the show by going to getsleepy.com/support or simply follow the link in the show notes. Thanks so much, my friends. Now, those of you who subscribe to our YouTube channel may have seen my community post there a couple of weeks ago when I asked which lines of my intros were your usual cues for relaxation and sleepiness. I appreciate all of your votes and responses, and in fact it's great to know that the first line of the show, where I welcome you to get sleepy, tends to be the key one to help you get into a more restful state of mind. Though I do like to mix things up a bit, to make sure each episode of the show begins with its own individuality, I do also recognise that a good sleep routine is one that is familiar and consistent. And so, Get Sleepy should complement that by doing the same sort of thing. That means that there are words, phrases, and relaxation techniques that I try to maintain across virtually all of our episodes. With that being said, let's take this time now to make sure you're as comfortable as can be, letting go of any excess energy hanging about in your body, as you give in to the cozy support of the mattress beneath you. Once you're settled, close your eyes and take a nice, deep breath in, holding for a moment, and then gently release it back out. Thank you. you can allow your attention to calmly rest on the flow of the breath. Trust that your body knows the ideal natural rhythm that will help to relax you and bring you closer to falling asleep. Just gently follow that rhythm while you listen along. We're about to rejoin another familiar character, the mythical hero Hercules, as he tackles his fourth task. So, my friends, once again, as I usually tend to say, this is where our story begins. It had snowed overnight, and the surrounding hills and fields were a perfect sea of white. To Hercules, riding through the countryside, it seemed that white, grey, and black were the only shades in the universe. The ground was white, the sky grey, and the bare branches of the trees looked black in contrast. But the colours would come back soon enough. The sun would emerge from behind the clouds, and the sky would turn back to its habitual blue. And eventually, the snow would melt from the tops of the evergreens, revealing their verdant leaves. But for the time being, Hercules was happy to travel through this muted, slightly monotonous landscape. As he rode across the fields, his horse Ianthe's hooves crunching through the snow, he felt his mind clear. Here, there were no distractions. He could think about anything or nothing. In the stillness, he experienced a sense of absolute tranquility. And with so little noise and movement, even subtle changes in the environment were noticeable. The crack of a twig, the call of a bird, or the grunting of a boar. That was what Hercules had come here for. The king had given him his fourth task, to capture the giant boar that was said to live on Mount Erymanthos. Hercules had not yet reached Erymanthos, but there wasn't much further to go. Looking straight ahead, he could see the snow-capped peaks of the mountains gleaming behind a veil of cloud. Besides, there was always a chance he might encounter the beast even before he got to the mountain. It roamed all over the land, rampaging through farmers' fields and devouring crops. In the winter, it was more likely that Hercules would find the boar at home on the mountain, asleep in its den, But even so, as he travelled through open country, he would keep his eyes peeled. Just then, Ianthe let out a loud huff. It was as though she could read Hercules' mind. When they travelled together, sometimes it seemed like they were having silent conversations. Every now and then, Ianthe would interject, communicating her opinion through a huff or a whinny. "You're right," said Hercules, giving her an affectionate pat on the side of her neck. "Then what?" Even if he spotted the boar, then what? He didn't have a plan. The king had instructed him to capture the creature and not to harm it. And while Hercules was confident that he could stun the boar momentarily and capture it in his net, he wasn't sure what he would do next. He would have to find a way to somehow calm the beast so he could transport it all the way back to the king's palace. Perhaps inspiration would come to him later, after another hour or two of meditative riding. But for now, Hercules' focus was on finding the boar, or at least a trace of it. If the beast was as large as they said, it shouldn't be too hard. And while the boar was fast, it was nowhere near as swift as the golden deer, which Hercules had managed to catch for his last task. As for its intelligence, boars were supposed to be clever, but surely they were no match for Hercules. All in all, he suspected that this would be one of his easier tasks, at least to begin with. For the next hour, Hercules' gaze drifted from the mountain on the horizon, which was gradually drawing closer, to the sea of snow around him, and then back again. His mind emptied as he looked from the mountain to the snow, from the snow to the mountain, and he sank into a trance. Then, at last, something caught his attention. The snow around him was mostly smooth and untouched, but in a patch of snow to his right, there were unmistakable markings, hoof prints. They were too big to be a boar's prints. Hercules was sure they belonged to a horse, which was nothing out of the ordinary. And yet something about these prints sparked his curiosity, perhaps because they were one of the few signs of life he'd seen that day. The prints led in the same direction Hercules was travelling, towards Erymanthos. So he decided to follow them. Soon, he reached a series of craggy hills and caves. The hoofprints led directly into one of the caves, which had a tall, narrow entrance. How peculiar, thought Hercules. A horse might take shelter near the opening to a cave, especially in cold weather. But it seemed that for some reason, this horse had gone right inside. Ianthe slowed to a trot as Hercules guided her into the entrance. At first, the passageway was dark and so narrow that there was only just enough room for the two of them to pass through. But then it began to widen, and Hercules became aware of the glow of firelight at the end of the tunnel. All of a sudden, the space opened up, and Hercules found himself in the coziest cave he could have ever imagined. A large fire blazed at the center, while the ground was covered with beautiful, hand-woven rugs. And all around were carved wooden chests and stacks of shelves and drawers. On the other side of the cave, just beyond the fire, was the source of the hoof prints. Not a horse, as Hercules had imagined. Not exactly. It was a centaur, a creature with the legs and body of a horse, but the torso and head of a man. He was a fine horse with a glossy chestnut coat. And he was a handsome man, too, young and fresh-faced. "Welcome," said the centaur. "My name is Pholus." Just as Hercules was introducing himself, he heard the clip-clop of hooves coming from an adjoining cave. And then, to his astonishment, another centaur appeared. This one had a darker coat, which in the firelight seemed to be speckled with flecks of gold. As a man, he was older than the other centaur, and he had a distinguished-looking beard. But young and old were relative terms for the centaurs. They could live for centuries. The older centaur bowed his head in greeting and said that his name was Chiron. Hercules was starstruck. Chiron was the most famous of all the centaurs. He was known to be the wisest, having been raised by the god Apollo. He learned the arts of music, archery, prophecy, and above all, herbs and medicine. One day in the distant future, Chiron would share his knowledge with the hero Achilles. He would be the boy's tutor in the years before the Trojan War. but that was still to come. Now, the centaur was honored to be meeting a different hero, the famous Hercules. Dismounting from his horse, Hercules grinned at the compliment. It was incredible to think that the legendary Chiron already knew of him. As the younger centaur, Pholus, prepared a pot of tea, Hercules settled down on the rug near the fire and continued his conversation with Chiron. He was curious to know what the two centaurs were doing here, near Mount Erymanthos. As far as Hercules knew, from the stories he'd heard, Chiron lived far away to the east, on Mount Pelion. That was true, Chiron nodded. Pelion was his homeland. But in recent years, he and Pholus had been traveling together, and they decided to make Erymanthos their base for the winter. The two companions had found this cave and turned it into a cozy home. Even though he had only just met them, Hercules could sense the depth of the bond between the two centaurs. Their connection reminded him of the farmer couple he'd met during his last task. Pholus and Chiron shared smiles and glances full of meaning. And even in the confined space of the cave, they moved around each other with elegance and grace, almost like a synchronized dance. Pholus was the more reserved of the two. For most of the time, he listened in attentive silence while Hercules and Chiron chatted away. Chiron was surprised to learn that Hercules had come to Erymanthos in search of the boar. In Chiron's opinion, such a task was beneath a hero like Hercules. Finding the boar would be easy. He often saw it plodding up and down the slopes of the mountain in its never-ending search for food. But the boar spent most of the day in its den. The next morning, Chiron would show Hercules exactly where it lived. Hercules explained that his challenge was not finding the boar, but catching it and bringing it back to the king. Chiron's rumbling laugh echoed through the cave. Without knowing it, Hercules had come to exactly the right place and the right person. Or rather, the right centaur. Chiron had the perfect solution. Right away, the centaur began to rummage through the countless drawers that lined the wall of the cave. The space reminded Hercules of an apothecary's shop, and in a way, that's what it was. Chiron was a master of medicine, and he had a collection of herbs and elixirs for every situation. He could ease aches, heal wounds, and calm wild animals. Pholus cleared away the tea, so Chiron had space to prepare another concoction, mixing leaves with sap and powder and other ingredients that Hercules didn't recognize. Soon, the pot was bubbling over the flames, and the cave was filled with a smoky, calming scent. When the mixture was ready, Chiron invited Hercules to take a sniff. Moving closer to the pot, Hercules took a deep breath in, inhaling the strange mixture. The effect was instant. Even without tasting it, Hercules felt a wave of relaxation spread right through him. He could have fallen asleep right then and there. Realizing that he was starting to sway, Hercules moved back from the pot. Chuckling, Chiron explained that they would bring this mixture with them tomorrow, and they would use it to lightly sedate the boar, so Hercules could bring the creature back to the palace without any problems. For the remainder of the day, Hercules relaxed in the company of the centaurs, sharing stories of his adventures. Ianthe rested nearby, watching the centaurs with curiosity and more than a little bewilderment. She didn't know quite what to make of them, these strange creatures that looked like a cross between her and her master. When evening fell, Pholus and Chiron prepared a hot, filling meal and opened up a jar of red wine. But it wasn't just any wine, Chiron explained. It was sacred, and it had been given to him by the wine god himself, Dionysus. Once the wine had been watered down, Hercules took a sip from his cup. It was rich, fragrant, and heady. As he savored it, he reflected on what an honor it was to receive the centaur's hospitality and be offered this special, sacred drink. With the warming effects of the fire and the wine, Hercules soon felt pleasantly sleepy. He tuned in and out of the conversation, listening as the centaurs reminisced about their encounter with the wine god the previous summer. And he soon lost track of the story, catching details here and there. Something about a pine grove near the sea, a secret sanctuary, and an exchange of gifts. Hercules found himself being gently roused by Pholus, feeling the centaur's hand on his shoulder. He must have nodded off. Pholus explained that he would set up a makeshift bed for Hercules, here in the main cave. The centaurs would sleep in the other room. Hercules wondered if they slept standing up like horses, or lying down like humans. In the corner of the cave, Ianthe was already dozing on her feet. Once the bed was made up, Pholus and Chiron said goodnight to their guest. Then they trotted into the other room, their hooves echoing against the cave walls. Yawning, Hercules snuggled down beneath the thick quilt. It had been quite a day, and he was more than ready for a long, deep sleep. Closing his eyes, he took a deep breath in. He could still detect that soothing scent from earlier, the mixture that Chiron had prepared. Or perhaps it was only his imagination. Either way, he certainly felt calm and very, very sleepy. Without daylight, there was no way of knowing exactly what time it was. But out of habit, Hercules awoke just after dawn. And he awoke to the sounds and smells of tea being brewed, though the centaur was moving as delicately as he could, not wanting to disturb his sleeping guest. When Pholus realized Hercules was already awake, he smiled and wished him good morning. Unlike Chiron, Pholus was an early riser, but Chiron would wake up soon enough and be ready to join Hercules on his search for the boar. Later, after a warming cup of herbal tea and a light breakfast, Hercules prepared to set off. He felt a little sad to be leaving the cave, where he already felt so at home, and to be saying goodbye to Pholus. But the young centaur assured Hercules that he was welcome to come back next winter, or to join them in the spring when they returned to Mount Pelion. It was such a beautiful place, said Pholus, with a wistful look in his eyes. There were lush green slopes, infinite springs and streams, and magical groves inhabited by nymphs and other nature deities. And from the mountain, the Aegean Sea was visible, sparkling down below in radiant shades of blue. Hercules promised to visit one day. Perhaps he would take a break between his tasks and treat himself to a little holiday. But for now, it was time to say goodbye to Pholus and to set off for Mount Erymanthos with his guide. Once they had left the cave, Chiron led the way along the trail and up the snowy slope. Hercules followed on horseback, with Ianthe cantering at a more energetic pace after a good night's rest. As they continued through the snow, Chiron pointed out all kinds of things that Hercules would never have noticed. The centaur knew every nook and cranny of the landscape, the names of every tree and plant, and all their medicinal uses. Most importantly, he knew exactly where to find the giant boar. Not long after entering a wooded area, Chiron turned to Hercules and whispered that this was the place. Here, hidden underneath a tangle of dried grass and fallen branches, was the entrance to the boar's den. Slowly and carefully, Hercules got down from his horse, making sure he didn't land too heavily. And with cautious steps, he approached the boar's den. Now that he was closer, he could see that there was a dip in the earth, and a space large enough for the boar to go in and out of its den. But from further away, it looked like nothing more than a mess of branches, with no visible opening. Without the centaur's help, he would never have found it. Chiron opened the satchel he always carried with him and took out the bait he had prepared earlier, acorns that were soaked in the calming herbal mixture. He placed them close to the entrance of the den, then gestured to Hercules to join him, hiding behind a nearby tree. They didn't have to wait long. Soon, a huge, twitching snout emerged from the den, with white tusks on either side. And then, out came the rest of its body, brown and bristly, and much, much larger than the average boar. It was more like a bear. Hercules wondered if the animal was naturally that size, or if it had grown to such impressive dimensions as a result of its feasts. The boar was notorious for its regular raids on farms and orchards. It ate everything in sight. And the acorns were no exception. The boar munched them happily, letting out a grunt of contentment once it was finished. Still watching from behind the tree, Chiron signaled to Hercules to wait. They needed to be sure that the boar was under the influence of the herbal mixture. After a minute or two, the boar's expression changed. Its eyelids drooped, and its eyes seemed to glaze over. Chiron nodded. Now was the time. Hercules stepped out from behind the tree and tentatively approached the boar. The creature appeared to register his presence, but only just. It stood there placidly. With help from Chiron, Hercules used ropes and netting to create a kind of harness for the boar. Once it was properly secured, he would be able to lead it across the land, all the way to the palace. And every now and then, he would give it another dose of Chiron's soothing mixture. Together, they made their way out of the woods. Chiron, Hercules on horseback, and the tethered boar walking slowly behind them. It was remarkable just how calm it was. It almost seemed tame, more like a pet dog than a wild boar. As they left Mount Erymanthos, Chiron gave Hercules some more advice on how to handle the boar during the journey. He also shared some additional tips on where to find medicinal plants and how to use them. Hercules laughed and said that he would never be able to remember so much information, but he appreciated it nonetheless, and he admired Chiron's enthusiasm. With a smile, Chiron said that Pholus often teased him for this very reason. But he couldn't help himself. He'd always been this way, with a deep love for nature and insatiable curiosity. Remember, said Chiron, the earth is an endless source of help and healing. One only needed to know where to look and how to use nature's gifts. Chiron then gave Hercules a gift of his own, although it was really from Pholus, he explained. The little bag contained the flowers and leaves of the ironwort plant, the ingredient of the tea that Pholus made. This way, Hercules could make the tea for himself and be reminded of his time at Erymanthos. Hercules was moved. He thanked the centaur for everything, promising that one day he would find a way to return the favor. But there was no need, said Chiron. Giving help and sharing knowledge was its own reward. The two friends said goodbye and went on their separate paths. Chiron returned to his cave, while Hercules began his journey south at a slow trot, always conscious of the boar behind him with its heavy steps and sporadic grunts. A couple of days later, Hercules stood in the palace garden beside his cousin, the king. The two men watched with satisfaction as the boar, now back to its usual self, ambled around its enclosure. It was a vast area that had been built specially, with trees and bushes, and even a little pond. The king had hired some of the best builders in the land to construct a solid fence to keep the boar safely contained. The creature already seemed to be quite at home in its enclosure, cheerfully snuffling at the ground. And the king was equally pleased. After the disappointment last time of not being able to keep the golden deer, he was delighted to finally have a new pet for his menagerie. And not just any pet, but the famous Erymanthian boar. There was also another advantage of the boar living here. Now, the residents of the villages and farms near Erymanthos could breathe a sigh of relief. Never again would the boar plunder their vegetable patches. Hercules had done well, said the king. He had completed his fourth task with admirable efficiency. Hercules replied that he owed his success to some new friends he'd made along the way. He would tell the king the story over a cup of herbal tea, a souvenir from Erymanthos. Still talking, the two men returned to the palace. And in the garden, the boar settled down in its cozy new den, and soon fell fast asleep.